bad. We're not feeling bad. Okay. We can go with that, can't we? We can go with that. I've got a little reading that might help us if we're holding up for you. It says this: have you noticed that when it's cloudy, you can't see the stars? And that sometimes clouds can hide even mountains from you. For a moment, it seems as if there are no stars shining or no mountains standing. Have the mountains moved? Have the stars stopped shining? No, the clouds have just hidden them. Feelings can be like clouds. They blow in and hide things from us. Sometimes they tell us God doesn't care or that God is far away. But we are told that our feelings do not affect God's facts. Our feelings come and go, but God stays the same. His promises are still shining. So as we think about that and think about how we feel, but also the truth that God is here, that God longs to meet with us, and that God loves us, we're going to sing our first song together, Jesus is King. But I am going to mute you so you can sing with all your might. Okay, brain teasers. We're thinking about brain teasers, meaning things that can be confusing and complicated, things that you have to think differently about. And the reason being is that our passage is quite interesting to be seen as a bit of a brain teaser. So Steve is going to read our passage. Continue on Hebrews. I will mute you. Well, no, we can stop. And it will come.
Okay, this is from Hebrews chapter 7, verses 1 to 10. This Melchizedek was king of Salem and priest of God Most High. He met Abraham returning from the defeat of the kings and blessed him. And Abraham gave him a tenth of everything. First, his name means king of righteousness, then also king of Salem, which means king of peace, without father or mother, without genealogy, without beginning of days or end of life. Like the Son of God, he remains a priest forever. Just think how great he was. Even the patriarch Abraham gave him a tenth of the plunder. Now the law requires the descendants of Levi who become priests to collect a tenth from the people, that is their brothers, even though their brothers are descended from Abraham. This man, however, did not trace his descent from Levi, yet he collected a tenth from Abraham and blessed him, who had the promises. And without doubt, the lesser person is blessed by the greater. In the one case, the tenth is collected by men who die, but in the other case, by him who is declared to be living. One might even say that Levi, who collects the tenth, paid the tenth through Abraham. Because when Melchizedek met Abraham, Levi was still in the body of his ancestor.
Yeah,
so the challenge today is you to tell me what that means. The challenge today, before we begin to think about that passage, is for you to draw or create or make something ancient that helps us to live our lives today. So you can write down it. So it can be something ancient that you know of, very old thing, that helps us to live our lives today. That is your challenge. You can just write it down if you want, but you could create it out of something or draw it or make it. And what we think about our passage today, I am going to mute you while you do that so you can be creative. Okay, hopefully you can all still hear me. It's good. Excellent. Okay. Well, I have to say, you know, that although I like brain teasers that we had in our quiz earlier, I'm not actually very good at them. I'm not really very good at working out lots of information, especially when you have to think laterally and differently. That's why I set all the quizzes for you, and I never really take part in them, because I can find things confusing like that. As many of you know, I love murder mystery programmes. I like watching them. I enjoy trying to work out who done it. But the one barrier to me working it out is that actually I get easily confused as to who is who and the things that they've done during the programme. So that doesn't really help. At the beginning of last year, I was quite unwell for a couple of weeks. I had pneumonia. And at one point, all I could do was lie on the sofa, and it took all the energy I had to pick up the remote and press the button. No joke, it did. And what I did was I watched the detective series Vera from start to finish. Now, there are about six or seven or even more series of Vera, and I watched all of them. And it started off okay because, you know, I was watching them, I could work it out. I was thinking, oh, yes, I know who that person is. But by the time I got to series four, I was all over the place. I was mixing up names, I was mixing up episodes, I was mixing up series. And at one point, when one of the main characters changed, I was like, I don't even know who these people are anymore. Vera? Who's Vera? I don't know. Because, you know, following things that have a lot of information that is all put together can be confusing. And however good or bad they are, they can sometimes befuddle our mind. So here, when we get to Hebrews chapter 7, and we head into this conversation about Melchizedek, I begin to feel that my mind is starting to frazzle already. Because to be honest, at first, this strange chapter that Steve read the beginning of seems nothing more than a brain teaser, something for the academics maybe, or the biblical scholars, something for those who enjoy working out lots of detailed information. With all its talk of tithing and blessings and ancestors and strange people with very weird names, to be quite honest, it's confusing from the outset. And with its strange discussions about ancient people who seem to have no bearing on the lives of those who first read this letter to the Hebrews, let alone us today, it would be very easy for us to give up, to skip this whole section and to move on to something else. And yet, when we get to this point in the letter, we already recognise that Melchizedek has been mentioned three times so far, twice in chapter 5 and once in chapter 6, all references to Psalm 110. And that despite the Jews having heard of Melchizedek from Psalm 110 and also from the book of Genesis, where he's first mentioned, so far no one has tried to find out anything about him. People, of course, knew at this point that Psalm 110 referred to Jesus and his place at the right hand of God, but no one really understood what this meant. And they certainly had no clue at all as to who Melchizedek was. Even though all these years this strange name had been in their history, eventually linked to Jesus, who they now follow. And so I guess because of this, finally here in chapter 7, it's no surprise that the author decides to find out more, to open the doorway, if you like, to this ancient world, the world of Genesis chapter 14, where the story of Melchizedek is told, in the hope that it would shed some light on the role of Jesus as the high priest for his people. It makes me think a little bit of the story, The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, where the children in this first book, well, it's not the first book, is it? Second book, whichever book it is. They're evacuated to an old house in the countryside during the war. And they don't know much about this house. And the first day that they're there, it's raining outside, so they can't go out and play in the ground. So they decide to investigate all the rooms in the house. There's some that they can't go into, but there's others that they investigate, and they find lots of strange paintings and lots of strange ornaments. But then they go into this one room, and all it's got in it is a wardrobe. Now, we all know the story, of course, but they don't. And they see this wardrobe, and they look in this room, and there's nothing else in there. And Peter says, "Nothing here." And he walks out, and everyone follows him. But Lucy stays, and Lucy starts to investigate. And when she goes into the wardrobe, of course, and she goes through the coats and she keeps on going, she finds the world of Narnia. She finds the doorway to a different world, a world that will be an adventure for all of them, that will last their lifetime, and it will change the way that they live. And you're here, in a way, in the book of Hebrews, the author is seeking to do the same. He's seeking to investigate, to open the wardrobe door, if you like, and in so doing, to enter a different world. So that instead of seeing the name Melchizedek, looking puzzled and then walking away, we can begin to understand how this name can change the way that we live. And he begins by transporting us back to the time of Abraham, before the people of God even came into being, to a rather strange story that appears in the middle of Abraham's adventures. The story goes that while Abraham was setting up home in the land of Canaan, the kings of Canaan, who had been ruled for decades by kings from the east, decided to rebel, wanting their own rule and reign over the area in which they were king. And in response to this, the kings of the east came over to face them in battle. Now, during the battle between the two sides, the Canaan kings, being much weaker, were defeated. The king of Sodom, being one of them, was routed. And Lot, who at that time lived in Sodom, was carried away in victory. Now, Abraham, who was Lot's uncle, on hearing about this battle and Lot being taken away, devises a daring rescue mission to get his nephew back. And with just 300 men, he miraculously wins, defeating the mighty kings of the east and taking Lot and the spoils from Sodom that had been stolen and bringing them back. Now, of course, following this battle, the king of Sodom comes to greet Abraham to thank him for what he has done and reclaim his goods. But also, out of nowhere, there appears this mysterious character called Melchizedek. Now, we're not told much about him in the story, except that he is both a king and a priest. He is a priest of God Most High. And when he appears, when he sees Abraham and all that he has done, he blesses him. "Blessed be Abraham," he says, "by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth. And praise be to God Most High, who delivered your enemies into your hand." He blesses Abraham, the father of many nations, and he shares bread and wine with him. And Abraham, in turn, gives Melchizedek a tenth of everything that he owned. And then Melchizedek disappears from the story, as if he had never been there. It makes me think a little bit about the programme Mr. Ben, whether anyone ever watched Mr. Ben. He used to, you know, walk down the road and go into a clothes shop and go into the changing room and get changed. And then he'd leave the changing room from a different door and he'd have a whole adventure based on what clothes he was wearing that he got changed into. So if he got changed into cowboy clothes, he'd go and have an adventure in the world of cowboy. And then after he'd had this adventure, suddenly, as if from nowhere, the shopkeeper would appear and take Mr. Ben back to the changing room and back to his normal world. And, you know, I often imagined the people in the adventures of Mr. Ben, the cowboys and so forth, wondering who this mysterious shopkeeper was. This man who suddenly appeared and then disappeared. A bit like Melchizedek in our story today. Which I guess is why the author to the book of Hebrews ventures into this world, because it seems that although Melchizedek was only there for a short time, his actions are actually really significant. And this is the point that the author wants his readers to get. Not who Melchizedek was and how it was possible that he suddenly appeared and disappeared, but rather why he was there. And more specifically, the fact that he was different, the fact that he didn't follow the normal priesthood, that he was not part of the ancestral line of those who had been priests of God for years, but that actually he was set apart from that because he came before the priesthood was even established. You see, when Melchizedek met Abraham, he met him before the people of God had come into being. So in that sense, there was no Levi, there were no priests, there was no liturgical order whose role it was to minister to others and offer sacrifices to God. Because they all came after Abraham, they came through Abraham, they were his descendants. Or as Hebrews said, when Melchizedek met Abraham, Levi was still in the body of his ancestors. Levi was Abraham's great-grandson. And the significance of that is that even though Abraham was the great grandfather of the priests, those whose role it was to bless others, it was he himself who was blessed by this character Melchizedek. Without doubt, the lesser is blessed by the greater. And even though Abraham was the great grandfather of the priests, those who traditionally received a tithe from others, those who people gave to, it was Abraham who gave Melchizedek a tithe himself, a tenth of everything. Showing that not only was Melchizedek different, he was also greater than Abraham and greater than the priesthood who came after him. As the author says here, just think how great he was. Even the patriarch Abraham gave him a tenth of the plunder. And not only that, but Melchizedek is referred to as a king as well as a priest. He is the king of righteousness and the king of peace. And he appeared out of nowhere, not reliant on life or death or ancestry for his ministry as the normal priesthood did, but mysteriously forever there, in some way resembling the Son of God who would come after. And so when we open the door of the wardrobe and tumble into the Old Testament world of Abraham in search of answers, we don't just find an ancient story of little interest or relevance. We don't just find a brain teaser about a person with a strange name. Instead, we begin to get an understanding of what it means for Jesus to be a priest. We see something of the richness and depth of his role. That it's not a role that just continued on the priesthood we read about in the Old and New Testament, but that actually it was very different. Because although Jesus was born as a human being, although he experienced suffering and pain and life on earth, and although he lived as a human and held on to humanity through death, in his role as priest, he does not follow in the footsteps of human beings. He does not follow the ancestral line. But just like Melchizedek, he is different. Because just like Melchizedek, he has no beginning and no end. He stands above the priesthood, blessing them and receiving from them. And therefore, Jesus, in his priestly role, is set apart. If you like, he's not frail and weak as human priests are. He does not first have to offer sacrifices for himself and then for us. He's not part of an ongoing priesthood that relies on someone to take over when he dies, because, of course, he will not die. He's different. And because he's from the line of Melchizedek, he's not only a priest, but he's also a king. Our King of righteousness and our King of peace. Or if you like, to sum it up, Melchizedek shows us that Jesus is far, far superior to all that has gone before and all that will come after. And that although he is still fully human as well as fully God, although he understands us, the focus here for the author of the Hebrews is that Jesus doesn't carry on the frailty of the human system. Instead, he's opened up a different priest so that when we come before him, we can come confidently before him. We don't need to fret that the priest will be preoccupied with his own issues, or that the personnel will one day change and be different, or that our faults and failings and problems will be too great to handle or too small to notice. Because Jesus's priesthood is greater than that. It is like that of Melchizedek. It is uninterrupted, if you like, by time and space and the problems that causes. It's undaunted by the size of the task before it. It's unparalleled to anything we have ever known or experienced on earth. It's greater than anything that has gone before. And above all else, it is solid and sure. It will not end. It is a true anchor for our soul. And you know, if we understand this, if by looking through the wardrobe to a different world, we can grasp this truth even just a little bit, then no matter how we feel, no matter what's happening around us, no matter what state the world is or how we feel about our lives, we can walk the road before us, trusting in Jesus, our priest and our king, and knowing that he will never let us down, no matter what we go through or no matter what moves in the world, because his priesthood is secure forever. We're going to think about that a little bit more as we enter into communion together. We have a priest who we can approach with great confidence, even though we fail and we make mistakes and we have issues and problems, even though the clouds cover him from our sight at times, we can still walk boldly up to the throne of God and to our great high priest Jesus. And so we're going to do that as we share communion together. Hopefully you will have your bits and pieces with you that you can share. But we're going to first of all remember what Jesus has done for us. Remember on the night that he was betrayed, he was sharing a meal with his friends, the disciples, and they were eating and drinking together. And suddenly Jesus did something which would probably have seemed very strange to them at the time. He took bread that was in front of them and he broke it. And he said these strange words. He said, "This is my body broken for you." And then they shared it together, each and every one of them, taking some of the bread and eating too. And then he took the cup. Mine is not the traditional colour this morning, but that's okay. He took a cup of wine and he said, "This is my blood shed for you, the blood of the new covenant." And each of them drank together. And so we are invited to eat and drink together this morning. We are invited to remember the sacrifice of Jesus, to remember why he gave himself, that we can live. And so before we do that, let's just pause before God. Let's just spend a moment in quiet, thinking about our lives, about the clouds that maybe are above us and within us, the things that feel we're a bit separated from God at times. And let's offer those things to God before we eat and drink. And so as we come toward the end of our service, we're going to sing together. We're going to offer our lives back to God. Jesus has given us everything. Jesus has given his life. And now he reigns as our king and priest, continuing to give us all that we need to live. And so let's sing this song as we offer our lives back to him. We're going to sing, "I Will Offer Up My Life," and I'm going to mute myself. So as we conclude this part of our time together, may God bless us and keep us. May we know not only the sacrifice of Jesus, but our great high priest who is forever there, who is forever reigning, and is forever welcoming us and receiving us with grace and love. And may we approach him each day with confidence, knowing that he will forever be there and forever the same. Amen.